Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
The gentleman from Wisconsin is recognized for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. My father once said to me, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should.
Should a Wisconsin congressman have put aside his longtime loyalty to President Trump and voted for his impeachment? And how will the Republicans' call for unity be perceived by members of the other party?
I mean, I've always talked about the Democrat Party, my Democrat friends.
Plus,
April 4th? How'd y'all get tomorrow's newspaper?
Tomorrow's already here.
A celebration of the life of Martin Luther King, streamed to your living room. All that and the regional news and review coming up.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
The gentleman from Wisconsin is recognized for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. My father once said to me, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should.
Should a Wisconsin congressman have put aside his longtime loyalty to President Trump and voted for his impeachment? And how will the Republicans' call for unity be perceived by members of the other party?
I mean, I've always talked about the Democrat Party, my Democrat friends.
Plus,
April 4th? How'd y'all get tomorrow's newspaper?
Tomorrow's already here.
A celebration of the life of Martin Luther King. Stream to your living room.
Tailor to mirror your life and interests with the goal of helping you to understand the world we live in and the region we hold dear by sharing the stories and information you'll enjoy and want to hear.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. So if you've been even remotely paying attention to what's been coming out of your radio or virtually any other communication device over the last 2 weeks, you're aware of the earth-shaking events happening in Washington. After weeks of claiming he, not Joe Biden, won the November election, President Donald Trump spoke before a crowd of supporters a week ago, many of whom went on to storm the U.S. Capitol and interrupt the joint session of Congress meeting to certify Biden's electoral victory. 6 people died as a result, and many more were injured in the attack that forced members of Congress to hide in fear for their lives, with the mob chanting to hang Vice President Mike Pence for carrying out his constitutional duty in certifying the election results. One of the congressmen that day backing an effort by Republicans against approving the electors from some states is our own 7th District Representative from Wisconsin, Tom Tiffany. He also voted with the majority, but not all, of his fellow Republicans this week in the vote to impeach President Trump for inciting the mob leading to the insurrection and violence. Here is Tom Tiffany's floor speech before his vote against the impeachment resolution on Wednesday.
The gentleman from Wisconsin is recognized for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. My father once said to me, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. In the short time I've served in this body, one thing is clear. This is not a serious place. Last year, we watched as the other side delayed COVID relief for months to inflict maximum pain and sway the outcome of the election. The Speaker said as much. And yet these last 2 days, we have seen just how fast they can move when they want to exact political retribution on their opponents. My friends on the other side now have complete control of both houses of Congress. And in a few days, they will control the entire executive branch as well. Madam Speaker, Joe Biden has talked about unity and healing. Is that what this is today? Is accusing Republican lawmakers of sedition and calling for their expulsion the plan for healing? Is working with Silicon Valley to digitally disappear those with whom they disagree with the plan for reconciliation? I was among the first to condemn the riots in Madison months ago, and I condemn what happened last week. But where were the swift accusations of incitement and insurrection from the other side last year? Is today's political theater a preview of what the American people can expect from single-party rule? 2 years of double standards and punishing those who voted for someone else? Madam Speaker, I hope Mr. Biden is watching today and he will rise to the moment and call off this effort to rub salt in the wounds of millions of Americans. It is now time for all of us, Democrats and Republicans alike, to turn down the temperature. Thank you.
The gentleman yields back. The gentleman from
Congressman Tom Tiffany joins us now. Welcome to Simply Superior.
Well, it's good to be here, Robin, and I hope everyone is surviving our latest little snowstorm, huh?
Absolutely, and any other adversity, but I'm going to hold out hope that 2021 will still be better than 2020.
It's got to be. It's got to be.
So I know that in your floor speech, you said that impeachment was counter to the cause for healing. You said that it was rubbing salt into the wounds of millions of Americans. But again, it's an indictment and not a conviction. So, two things. One, does President Trump bear any responsibility for what happened last week? And if so, what's the appropriate action that should be taken?
Yeah, so I believe the president does hold some responsibility for what happened. I think in particular, when you look at calling people to basically go after Vice President Pence, I don't agree with that. However, I think it's really important to understand where we came from, that we got to this point. When you saw last summer with the mob violence that was going on across our country that did billions of dollars of damage, and not that far from here, I mean, Minneapolis has just been devastated and really has not recovered from it, Madison, Kenosha. And many of these same people who were tearing into President Trump yesterday said nary a word last summer when that mob violence needed to stop at that point. Now, that does not justify what happened last week, because I denounced the violence that was in Madison, the protests that turned into riots back in June, and I've been very consistent. This needs to stop, and elected officials up and down the board need to use law enforcement to be able to uphold the law and stop this mob violence. And I denounce what happened last week. And so it needs to stop. But it was very disappointing yesterday. I voted against the impeachment. And I did because we're now trivializing a very important constitutional process. To do this a second time, when the first time it was proven it was not justified, the Mueller report showed very clearly that there was no Russian interference that the Trump campaign conducted. And Nancy Pelosi made it very clear from 4 years ago, she wanted to drive President Trump out of office. And so once again, she chose to use this path of impeachment. And I really disagree with it. The other thing that I disagreed with is the process. In about the time that the Packers and Rams are going to play a football game this weekend, that's how much time we spent on debating whether impeachment should happen. Something that is so important, so solemn, such a significant event in our American Republic, and we spent 3 hours on it. It really does trivialize it, and that's why I voted against impeachment.
Mm-hmm. But if we could go back to the root cause of this violence, and I don't want to get into what people are calling the whataboutism, the other things that have happened last summer or indeed the last impeachment, but I do want to focus on this one. Certainly the mob didn't storm the Capitol because they had nothing else better to do. They wanted to stop the certification of Biden's victory. So I have to ask you, did Joe Biden win the election in November?
He did. Now, you can say to me that I'm conducting what you call whataboutism. I think it's very important to understand where we came from. This violence was accepted by mayors and governors across the country 6 to 8 months ago. They accepted it. They are normalizing it by doing that and not calling it out immediately. That's why I did call it out immediately and why I have done it so in this case also. It has to stop. It really does have to stop. And So that's where I come from.
Mm-hmm. So if Joe Biden won the election, though, was the mob lied to?
Joe Biden has won the election. I objected to a few of the state's electors also. And I did that because there's some states that are not following their election law. And Wisconsin, to a certain extent, is not also. If people read the dissenting opinion by Chief Justice Rogensack in the Trump versus Biden case in Wisconsin, they'll see that the law is not being followed with absentee ballots. Now, that does not mean that Joe Biden did not win Wisconsin. He may very well have won Wisconsin, but we're never going to know for certain because there are some ballots that were cast irregularly in how the law is written. And it's really important that we get to the bottom of this. And that's why I objected to the electors, not to overturn the election, but to make sure that only legally cast ballots are being counted. For example, in Madison, when they had the Democracy in the Park events throughout September and October, many of those ballots, unknown to those voters, were cast illegally because they did not follow the proper process. Same thing was happening in Pennsylvania, Georgia, and a few states like that. That's all that we were seeking. Let's make sure we get an honest count of these voters. Now, the Electoral College was decided last week. Joe Biden will be the next president of the United States, and that peaceful transference of power will happen with his inauguration next week.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned a justice. Bear with me for a hypothetical, because the courts have ruled on these cases. So if Tricia Zunker were to challenge your election by saying that all legal votes from the members of the Ho-Chunk Nation weren't properly counted, whether that's true or not, and I'm not saying she said any such thing, this is a hypothetical, and a court threw out her case, would she be within her rights to continue trying to stop you from being seated?
Anyone that wants to challenge an election like that, they are welcome to. That is the purpose of the law. What's different, and I see the stories where they say those of us that objected to the Electoral College, that we're saying that we would be throwing out our elections. Those are two different things. They're comparing apples and oranges in this way. As a 7th congressional district representative, I am elected purely on a basis of who gets the most votes. And there was no doubt in my election as far as whether I won or not. But that's purely a majority election. It is different with the president. It is with the Electoral College. And while each state, a majority of the voters that vote for that presidential candidate, that's who shall get the electors, it is not a purely majority-driven process for president. It's an Electoral College process. So to compare the two, they're two different things. But anybody that would contest an election, they can go ahead.
Right, but Joe Biden also got the majority of the Electoral College any way you slice it, correct?
Oh, he did. That was decided on January 6th, and that was the purpose of the Electoral College. In fact, go back and read Ruth Bader Ginsburg's statement in regards to the presidential election. The final decision point and an election is not, for president is not over until January 6th. And that's exactly what happened.
We're speaking with Representative Tom Tiffany, who represents the 7th District of Wisconsin in the United States Congress. So you did mention that President Trump does bear some responsibility for what happened. If not impeachment, what would the appropriate punishment be?
We are just a few days from the peaceful transference of power, just as we've done numerous times before in American history. The 46th president is about to be sworn in, and that's Joe Biden, and I believe that a process should be allowed to go forward. And one of the big points that many people have been making here the last few days is this is going to happen. It's inevitable. It's right around the corner. For a lot of people, that were, you know, avid supporters of President Trump, we view this as, are you just pouring salt into the wounds? Are you trying to spike the football with him going out the door? That doesn't lead to that national unity. You heard in my remarks yesterday when I commented about President-elect Biden has talked about we need to have unity in America. This does not foster that. I believe Speaker Pelosi took a very poor approach if that is the goal, is to achieve national unity.
Sure, I understand that, but I'm not asking about the mechanisms of achieving national unity. I'm saying President Trump bears some responsibility, as you said, for an incident in which people were killed and the United States Congress was attacked. So should there be any punishment? Forget about removal from office, as you just said. Whether anybody does anything or not, he's going to leave office in a few days. But is there a punishment that should be meted out to him? What would that appropriate punishment be?
I think you could say that the ultimate punishment has been given, and that is he will be leaving office. I mean, obviously, he, like many of his supporters, are very disappointed that he's not going to continue to be president. And I think a lot of people say that is sufficient punishment. And I think you can also look at a few really leading constitutional scholars like Jonathan Turley.
He would be leaving office, though, even if he hadn't done anything. So, again, he did something that is, at least in your words, partially to blame for this. If he, as he said himself, if he went on Fifth Avenue and he shot somebody tomorrow because he's leaving office, should he get no other punishment or should he get something?
So what are you proposing that should be done?
But I'm not, and I don't mean to make light of it, but I'm asking you, is there, and I don't expect you to have an exact prescription, but if not impeachment, should it be tried in a criminal court? What would be the appropriate way of responding to his involvement in this incident?
Well, impeachment is completed now, and those articles of impeachment will be sent to the United States Senate, and the United States Senate is going to decide whether they're going to convict. So the United States Senate is the next stop, and the president will have the ability to defend himself if the U.S. Senate chooses to go forward.
Okay. What's the most important message you want to give to the people of the 7th District regarding these events and going forward?
The mob violence needs to stop. And we need elected officials, myself, the president, the president-elect, and others, to make it very clear the mob violence needs to stop. And we need mayors and governors and other people who did not say anything about this mob violence last summer. They need to step forward, because otherwise this becomes normalized in society. And you're going to see people across the political spectrum that are going to continue to use these means if it doesn't stop. So it's time for some of the people, elected representatives, that did not stand up last summer when they thought the violence was something that was beneficial to them. It's time for them to step forward now also and join all of us. And I would comment just in regards to myself, I have been consistent in denouncing this mob violence. I did back in June with the State Street riots in Madison. I did last week after what happened at the United States Capitol. It's time for all of us to speak as one, Republicans and Democrats, and denounce the violence and stop it.
Right. And remind me, you also, or have you spoken out against the causes of those incidents, being the death of George Floyd at the hands of the Minneapolis police and the shooting of Jacob Blake?
There should never be a pretext used like that. I do not support racism. I do not support excessive use of force. But it's also the responsibility. I mean, remember in the case of Jacob Blake, how did he get into the trouble that he did? He was going after his girlfriend and had her child in a vehicle And he did not have permission to do that. He had a knife on him. I think it's very important to look at what the situation was there rather than just casting aspersions at the police.
But he was shot 7 times in the back. Is that appropriate?
I was not there. All I know is that he was carrying a weapon and his girlfriend had called the police because she felt she was not safe.
Okay, and George Floyd had a criminal record. So does that justify that Officer Chauvin had his foot on his knee on his neck for nearly 8 minutes?
Excessive force should never be used.
Okay. Lastly, you're now in a party that is out of power in the executive and legislative branches. So what, going back to issues for our district, what bipartisan efforts do you have planned to benefit the people of the 7th District? And have you identified a Democratic partner to help get it passed?
The Democrat Party now has complete control of the levers of power out in Washington, D.C. And I'm anxious to see what leadership they bring to the table to deal with the real issues that are before us. I think the greatest thing that can happen right now is all the freedoms that were taken away from people in 2020 as a result of the, in particular because of the coronavirus, is I think it's very important to return those freedoms to people. I mean, we have people that have not been able to practice their religion. We've had people that their businesses have been shut down. It is time to restore those freedoms. We know who is affected by the coronavirus. We should make sure that they're protected. There's a vaccine that is now available. It is time to take the shackles off from the American economy and the American people and allow them to return to all the freedoms that they had pre-2020.
Sure. But back to my question, do you have a Democratic partner that you've identified or someone you would work with, again, for the benefit of the 7th District?
Yeah, I have a whole series of issues that I've been working on, and I welcome Democrats to join me at any time to work on, for example, expanding freight rail in northern Wisconsin. We have a great opportunity with the Canadian National divesting themselves of some of their rail assets. Really important that we have good freight rail for industry. Broadband expansion, that is a top priority of mine, and I'm willing and able and ready to work with anyone in regards to that. I see Senator Klobuchar over in Minnesota just talked about that she may be leading the antitrust actions against the big tech oligopolists. I'm willing to work with anyone, Republican or Democrat, to make sure that those tech companies, that they be held to account for the censorship that they're putting on the people of America. Something that, by the way, is terribly un-American, and I hope we can all agree upon that, that the First Amendment of free speech should be allowed to flower in this country and not wither under the restrictions that the tech companies like Facebook and Google and Twitter are putting on people at this point.
Mm-hmm. And one last thing, in the spirit of bipartisanship, you used a minute ago the phrase Democrat Party instead of its proper name, which is Democratic Party. Why do you say that? Is it demeaning, or is there any reason you wouldn't say Democratic Party? I'm a former editor, so, you know, the language means a lot to me here.
No, I've always talked about the Democrat Party, my Democrat friends.
No. It's the Democratic Party. That's more respectful. Democrat Party is beginning to be perceived as disrespectful. And I would just say, as someone who really concentrates on grammar, it's wrong. It's the Democratic Party.
No disrespect meant in any way.
Great. So we'll hear Democratic going forward, I assume. Or not. All right. Any other thoughts for the voters and the people of the district?
Really look forward to working for the people of the 7th Congressional District. And we have stuff teed up for the Twin Ports area. Just really important things that are happening in terms of shipping critical projects that I hope will go forward, like the Nemadji Trail Natural Gas Project, for safe, reliable, affordable electricity. Hopefully that Nemadji Trail Project will not get held up. And hopefully the federal government, under the leadership of Joe Biden, will help make that happen. Really hopeful that that Husky Refinery rebuild will happen. Really important that those industrial projects go forward so we have affordable energy for America that helps us all prosper.
Well, we all can agree on prosperity. Thank you so much for joining us.
Talk to you soon.
We were speaking with Tom Tiffany, who represents Wisconsin's 7th District in the United States Congress. Coming up, The Mountaintop, a dramatic tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., streamed to your living room. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Today is the actual anniversary of the birth of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in 1929, although the official holiday is Monday. And the Duluth Playhouse is celebrating with an online production of The Mountaintop by Katori Hall. The play stars Gabe Mayfield as Dr. King and Daisha Ramsey as Cam May, a housekeeper who brings him a cup of coffee at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis the night before his assassination. Here is a bit from their first encounter.
Oh, pardon me. Where's my manners? Come on in.
Where would you like me to put this?
On the table over there. How much is that going to cost?
Folks down there say it's on the house for you. It's like it's your house, they say, but you ain't got to pay them. But you can pay me for getting my pressing curls all wet out in this rain.
You knew?
First day, sir.
Stayed here plenty of times, but I ain't never seen your face.
But I've done seen your face before.
Oh, you have?
Of course. You're on the TV down at Woodworth's. You're like the Beatles.
Wish folks would listen to me like they listen to the Beatles.
Mm-hmm. Especially the white folk. Got a cold?
Just then got hoarse, shouting.
And carrying on?
No, not carrying on, testifying.
Shame I didn't get a chance to see you tonight. I heard that you was carrying up a storm up at Mason Temple.
How you know?
Negro talk strike faster than lightning. They see that folks was crying and singing and mm-mm, and I would have liked to seen something like that. Something that I could tell my children. When I was nothing but a little chickadee, I seen Dr. Martin Luther King cutting it up in the pulpit. Mm-hmm. That was something to see.
Wish there had been more folk there.
How many was there?
A couple thousand.
Honey, that's a lot.
Could have been more, in my humble opinion.
But it was storming. Tornadoes, and they all get out. You can't get no Negro folks out in the rain like this.
And why is that?
God will strike you down if you move a little too much. That's what my mama always used to say. When it was storm like this, my mama would say, be still. But I think that she just wanted us children to sit our tails down somewhere because the lightning spooked her nerves so bad.
That's an excerpt from The Mountaintop by Katori Hall, starring Gabe Mayfield and Daisha Ramsey in a Duluth Playhouse production streaming online in honor of the birthday of Dr. King today. With me is Philip Fazio, who I can't say if he directed it or is responsible for the staging. I'll let him explain. But welcome to Simply Superior, Phil.
Thank you so much for having me.
So in the credits, it says staging, but I'm thinking directing. Tell us the mechanical explanation there.
Sure. So this is a completely collaborative project. It's not a traditional theater piece, one, you know, because there is no live audience. It's a virtually streamed production. But also, it's not fully produced in that this is a staged reading. So the process within putting on this particular production is a little untraditional from how we usually do shows at the North Shore Theater. So when I say that it is a collaborative process, we have a brilliant dramaturg, Deanna Johnson, who did the dramaturgy for the production. We have a phenomenal videographer, Pascal Pastrana, who did all of the camera blocking and the videography for this production. And then, you know, I was kind of overseeing everything sort of as a producer, doing some staging, some character work, but honestly working as a true collaboration with the other artists on our production team.
Mm-hmm. And so why this play? First of all, I do appreciate that explanation, by the way, because this is a new age and this is the new normal. So you have new titles that go along with that, I can understand.
Yep.
So why this particular play?
Well, for one thing, like you were saying in your introduction, it's Martin Luther King Jr. weekend, and we couldn't think of a better way to honor Dr. King than by producing Katori Hall's brilliant reimagining of what the last few hours of his life might have been like at the Lorraine Motel. And then just also, when we were thinking back on 2020 and all of the events that have taken place over the past year, everything from, you know, the pandemic to the murder of George Floyd, we are trying to think about pieces that really felt right for the moment. And this was just a piece that I had encountered, you know, 10 years ago when it was performing on Broadway, and it's always kind of been ringing in my ear. And I couldn't think of a more timely time to produce The Mountaintop than in our current moment.
Mm-hmm. The Mountaintop speech, I should say, is hailed by scholars and those more familiar with Dr. King as a greater speech, if you can measure them, than I Have a Dream. So what's special about the speech and how does it work as a basis for a production?
One of the things that I find so haunting about the speech is at the end when he really reflects on his life and his mortality. And when you read those words today, knowing that, you know, within about 24 hours, he would no longer be on this planet. And as this moment when we are all reflecting on our own mortality, living within the pandemic, I think that it just really rings true to this moment. And I just find it so haunting every time I read the speech.
We're speaking with Philip Fazio. He's the artistic director of the North Shore Theater and the Duluth Playhouse. So what did you know about King growing up, or his speeches, or the differences between them?
Yeah. I mean, when I think of Dr. King and when I think of what I was introduced and knew about him growing up as a child, it was the I Have a Dream speech in Washington. That's the iconic image and words that I hear in my ear when I immediately think of Dr. King. I honestly was unfamiliar with the I Have Been to the Mountaintop speech until I encountered the play, The Mountaintop. I think it's kind of interesting, like, you know, we could talk about why maybe one speech versus the other is tends to be the go-to text, especially maybe for, you know, white kids like me who grew up in Tempe, Arizona. But as I got into more of the research as we were focusing on this play, I really, my eyes were open to what a sanitized version of Dr. King and the civil rights movement I was introduced to as a child in the American education system. You know, the stories that I heard growing up in school was, oh yes, Dr. King and LBJ worked hand in hand towards a united goal. And then, you know, as our dramaturg was presenting research to our cast and I was doing my own research on the side, I realized that that was not quite the rosy picture of American history in its true form. It was, you know, more of a sanitized, made-for-TV version that has been cut down, you know, and fed to children like me when growing up in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, of course, he was not as popular or not as widely popular as we believe he was at that time. He had taken a position, as you mentioned, hardly in step with Lyndon Johnson against the Vietnam War. He was a pacifist, so, you know, war was not his thing and certainly not that war. You mentioned the word, you said the word sanitized two times, so I have to bring up that the play mentions the sanitation workers' strike, which is what brought him to Memphis, not just to give a speech.
We're not going to stop These sanitation workers gonna get their due. I'm here to make sure of that. April 4th? How'd y'all get tomorrow's newspaper?
Tomorrow's already here.
King challenges court restraint. Vows to march. They got that right. This man Loeb calls himself not allowing these sanitation workers to march over my dead body. Yesterday, two U.S. Marshals sped across town to serve the Negro leaders with copies of the order. They found Dr. King and four other defendants at the Lorraine Motel.
Folks can send you flowers, since they know where you're staying.
That ain't the only thing that they can send me. The city said it was seeking the injunction as a means of protecting Dr. King. We are fearful that in the turmoil of the moment, someone may even harm Dr. King's life. And with all the force of language we can use, we want to emphasize that we don't want that to happen. Wish the mayor had jurisdiction over airplanes too. You know, somebody called a bomb threat on my plane from Atlanta to Memphis. Thank God they didn't find one.
Just another day on the job.
Mm-hmm.
Civil rights will kill you before then. Paul Miles will.
The play's also a fantasy with the whole encounter with the housekeeper, or was she a real person?
Oh, well, I don't want to spoil anything for the listeners who haven't seen the show yet. But yes, she is a mysterious figure. Dr. King, when he gets back after making the speech, you know, he's tired. It's been a long day, but he's got to work on his next speech. You know, he was always working on that next project, always on the go. And so he calls up room service and orders a cup of coffee. You know, it's raining, storming, thunder, lightning outside. And there's a knock at the door shortly after he orders the cup of coffee. And this employee of the Lorraine Motel is there to deliver the cup of coffee. She comes in, she puts down the coffee, and they start up a conversation. And it turns into a whole reflection of Dr. King's life, what he's accomplished, what he still hopes to accomplish with the time that he hopes that he has left here on Earth. And that's kind of where I want to leave it, because I don't want to quite give away who exactly this person is, but she's not who she appears to be at first, I will say that.
Right, and we can't give away everything, too, in the sense that you can't do all this for free. You've got a whole Playhouse season, or a couple of them, that are, you know, struggling to survive, like so many of our arts organizations in, well, everywhere, but, you know, in the Twin Ports. How does one watch it? What does it cost? And I know it's playing on a computer near you, but how do we get there?
Yeah, you can get all of that information at our website, duluthplayhouse.org. It costs $10 for each household to view the production. When you buy a virtual ticket, you will be sent an electronic code that you put into the website, and then you will have 48 hours to view it at your leisure. So it's kind of like video on demand for theater.
Perfect for the King holiday weekend, and also perfect for, we have a comfy couch now that sits in front of the computer, and so that is our comfort seating, state, whatever you call it. So lastly, what does this mean for the Playhouse, and for Gabe, and well, I guess the entire crew and cast, but Gabe is your real A-lister. He's been in all sorts of plays and productions, and I'm feeling like old, and I remember when he started out. So what's all this mean for both the Playhouse and everybody in it?
Yeah, well, and also I would say that Daisha, who's playing Camille, has appeared in two previous productions. She's a senior currently at UMD and is a huge rising star within our community. And as you'll see on the screen, both her and Gabe are extremely photogenic, and I would not be surprised if we saw them on our TVs in an actual television or maybe movie someday as well.
And the dramaturgist, Deona Johnson, is also known as DJ and a few other stage names, for which she's getting quite a bit of renown locally as a singer, correct?
Yes, she's fantastic. I I absolutely adored collaborating with her. She actually took an acting class that I led this summer, a socially distanced masked acting class, and that was where, like, I kind of got to know her and work with her. And she collaborated on a piece for our streamed Halloween project that we did. And yeah, I'm a huge fan, and want to keep bringing her in our doors as much as possible. But yeah, during the pandemic, you know, it's I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's definitely been tough for our organization, as it has for, you know, arts institutions across the country. Thankfully, we've been able to get by with a lot of support from our patrons, who've been extraordinarily generous during this difficult time. But we're going to make it. You know, we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. The vaccine is out there. As soon as shots get in people's arms, we're going to start opening up our doors. And we have got so many fantastic plans coming down the pipeline. And we are so excited to finally get there and welcome people back into our theaters again and actually get back to doing theater, not creating TV shows anymore, but doing theater again.
All right. And once again, we can find all that at DuluthPlayhouse.org.
Yep, that's correct.
Great. We've been talking to Philip Fazio. He's the staging person / director / artistic director for The Mountaintop, now streaming from the Duluth Playhouse on a computer near you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Robin.
And we'll be back after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hey, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So we just heard at length from Congressman Tom Tiffany on the Wisconsin side. Brooks, how did his Minnesota counterpart, Pete Stauber, come down on the impeachment vote? And before you answer that, I will add that we did invite him on the show as well, but we did not hear back from his staff before our Thursday deadline.
Yeah, U.S. Representative Pete Stauber, a Republican from Hermantown who represents a broad swath of northeastern Minnesota, joined his other three Republicans from the Minnesota delegation in voting no against impeachment this week. He put out a release, you know, before the vote, during, after, essentially saying, you know, I believe efforts to impeach the president contradict the idea of unity and will only further divide our already divided nation, he said in a quote. Stauber was one of those Republicans who joined in the lawsuit seeking to challenge and overturn the results of the election. He was not one of the Republicans to challenge the Electoral College certification, however. So he's been a little mixed on the issue, and he said he will be attending the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden next week.
All right. Well, we'll stay tuned for that. Danny, one of the things that Tom Tiffany talked about as a priority for the district beyond the political issues was broadband. And actually, he identified rural broadband as something he would be willing to seek a Democratic partner to work on. And he named Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota as one possibility. But Wisconsin's Democratic Governor Tony Evers is weighing in on the issue.
Yeah, in his State of the State address this week, he announced that his next two-year state budget proposal would include roughly $200 million for expanding broadband access across the state. You know, that's about four times what was included in the last budget. And, you know, in rural areas of Wisconsin, there's still about, you know, 430,000 people who lack access to high-speed internet. The state ranks about 36th nationwide in terms of accessibility in rural areas. And so this has been pretty much a bipartisan issue in Wisconsin. It's received support for funding in the past, but it's kind of a question whether or not Republican lawmakers, especially at a time when we're in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic, would approve an increase of that amount.
Well, another federal issue that impacts the state, though not as broadly, if you will, is the wolf hunt.
Yeah, so wildlife and environmental groups are suing to overturn a decision by the Trump administration back in November, or back in late fall, to remove federal protections for the gray wolf across most of the country. They want to see those protections restored. So a number of groups, including the Sierra Club and the Humane Society of the United States, filed that lawsuit on Thursday. And this comes as some wildlife groups in Wisconsin are pushing state regulators to resume the wolf hunt. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has previously said that they would resume a wolf hunt this coming November, saying that they needed more time to develop a wolf management plan before they kick that off. But that's drawing backlash from Republican lawmakers and some wildlife groups like the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association and Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. They think that the wolf hunt should resume immediately because under state law, it says that Wisconsin regulators should allow a wolf hunt whenever the wolf is not under federal protection.
Well, Brooks, now for something totally different. I don't think at all federal and pretty local. You have news about Duluth Kombucha or Kombucha. First of all, tell me if I'm pronouncing it right. Secondly, tell us what you're talking about.
Well, sure. Duluth Kombucha, as it's pronounced, has opened the state's first kombucha tap room in Duluth, kind of near the Super One by Leif Erickson Park over here. Rochelle Ron founded the business in 2016, and in a year since, you know, you can find kombucha in pretty much any grocery store and even gas station cooler these days. It's a fermented, tangy, non-alcoholic or very low alcohol brewed tea beverage, essentially sweetened with different fruit flavors or hops or anything. It's often a go-to NA option for breweries to offer, and for Duluth Kombucha, it's a chance for her to reclaim some sales she lost when everyone shut down for a few months. So she's hoping to have that personal touch with an in-person retail space. You know, what I discovered writing the story is it's sort of part of a trend that, you know, whereas the Twin Cities and I'm sure Milwaukee and other metro areas have lost a lot of restaurants and bars during the pandemic, Duluth and Superior, we've added more businesses than we've permanently lost, you know, including, you know, a tiki bar in West Duluth or a Jamaican restaurant in Superior. And now we've got this now or never entrepreneur opening up Duluth Kombucha, a tap room.
All right. Well, that sounds like a positive note to the pandemic, but I'm sure you've got more sobering statistics for us, too.
Yes. And what we're trying to do recently is put out not just the number of people who continue to die and continue to contract the virus, but the number of people who are being vaccinated. In Minnesota, that's reaching the tens of thousands. And actually just got an update from Douglas County, Wisconsin, saying about 75% of eligible healthcare workers have been vaccinated in Douglas County. They prioritized healthcare workers from around the county, especially rural first responders, dental staff, school nurses, home health workers. The CDC, the Trump administration, recently opened up the vaccine for all those 65 and up and with pre-existing health conditions. So now there are many more people in line, and the question has moved from am I eligible to where do I get the vaccine and when can I get it?
Danny, anything to add?
Yeah, in Wisconsin, more than 600,000 doses of the vaccine have now been allocated, but in reality, only about 373,000 have been shipped. So, you know, we've been seeing, like other areas, delays in getting supply out to where it's needed. There are some things that are being worked through in who's going to be vaccinated coming up soon. Next week, the state plans to begin vaccinating police and firefighters as part of the phase 1B. And that would include teachers and correctional workers and those over 65 and older, I believe. And then also this week, we found the new strain of coronavirus, the more contagious strain of coronavirus in Eau Claire County this week. Old news for Minnesota, which had already seen it, but new to Wisconsin this week.
And as I said, sobering news for all of us. All right, we've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
and Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks, Robin.
You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport, and be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. Next week, can we offer a note of hope? It's a performance marking the times we're in called This Moment in Time. It features voices and talents from Duluth, Superior, and around the region, produced and organized by Dan Sand Creatives, and performed last week at the Sacred Heart Music Center for an online audience, of course. We leave you with one of those voices, the dramaturgist of this week's Martin Luther King tribute, Deona Johnson, a.k.a. DJ, a.k.a. Afro Geode. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.
I tried to talk to my piano. I tried to talk to my guitar. Talk to my imagination. Confided into alcohol. I tried and tried and tried some more. Told secrets till my voice was sore. Tired of empty conversations, 'cause no one hears me anymore. 100 million stories and 100 million songs. I feel stupid when I sing. Nobody's listening to me. Nobody's listening. I talk to shooting stars, but they always get it wrong. I feel stupid when I pray. Why am I praying anyway, if nobody's listening? Anyone, please send me anyone. Lord, is there anyone? I need someone. Oh, anyone, please send me anyone. Lord, I used to crave the world's attention. I think I cried too many times. I just need some more affection. Anything to get me by. 100 million stories and 100 million songs. I feel stupid.